After this introduction to the artists, their training, and their mediums, I attempted to find out what the essential difference was between native art of the Pacific Northwest and the traditional Western European art. I say Western European because I feel that in some ways the traditional art of Eastern Europe and the hagiography of the Eastern Orthodox Church in particular was in many ways similar to that of the Northwest Coast Indians. The icons of the Orthodox monks follow traditional, well-laid-down rules, which are still practiced to this day. Previous to painting an icon, the painter would fast and pray, which can be compared to the pole carver searching out the spirit of the tree or pole. In both cases, the artist was combining storytelling, decoration, and a great respect for the spirit. I did not delve into this aspect because I felt most people are not familiar enough with Eastern European art to undertake a discussion of it, but we are all familiar with Western European art history. Some contemporary native artists, such as Robert Davidson, have combined modern abstract art with traditional native designs in a very pleasing manner. First, we shall hear Bill Reed discussing the difference between native art and art of the Western European tradition, with asides on the differences between Haida and Kwakutl art.
I think Indians, I don't like the term Indian very much. That's an invention. Indian is an invention of the white man. And the people of the Western Hemisphere had no concept of themselves as being a homogeneous group known as Indians or anything else. And there are, of course, numerous art styles ranging all the way from the temples of the Mayas to spindle whorls of the Salish on our coast here. So I'm concerned mainly with the Northwest Coast and particularly with Haida style, and what makes it different from other art styles is that the Haidas were different people from other people, and they saw the world in a different way and interpreted it in their graphic and plastic arts in a different way. Again, to try to explain this verbally is very difficult, and I don't know exactly where you would start. In a lot of ways, it was similar. I mean, people are much more alike than they're not alike, and their art was devoted to the visual interpretation of their mythic origins, and that's been the purpose of art in a great many societies, most societies in the world, including our own. I mean, that is our Western Judeo-Christian art interprets our myths. So, in that way, it's not different at all. But their myths were different, and their way of transferring these into a visual medium was different. And that's about all you can say. And, you know, if you look at Haida art and you look at other art, they obviously look different, and I suppose that's what the difference is.
Do you see a difference between the Kwakutl art and the Haida art?
The answer to that is yes.
What is the difference?
Well, they look different. I don't know, they were different people, and just as two individuals interpret things in a different way, so two groups of people interpret things in different ways, and the Kwakutl had a different social structure and a different set of mythologies, different sexuality, they were just very different people, and this, so their art is obviously going to be different, and that's all you can really say, I think. And So if you look at enough quackyoodle art and enough higher art, you can tell one from the other. But if you want to analyze this on a structural basis, then again, you sort of have to do this visually, or else go into an awfully complicated description, which I don't think I could even begin to do.
There's sort of no general rule that you can tell if it's higher art or if it's quackyoodle art.
Well, I haven't got one.
A young Indian said to me recently off the totem pole, he said quackyoodle art is more in. It goes deeper.
Does it now? Well, I guess that's
fine. I asked him to give me one word to describe it, and that's what he said.
Yeah, it's a little bit more sculptural in some of its aspects and not so much high art. It tends to be a little two-dimensional even in the totem pole. It's like a very high relief carving rather than a piece of three-dimensional sculpture. He's right in that respect. But not entirely, because, again, on the quackyoodle totem poles, they also went in for this to some extent. It's hard to make rules. I mean, Bill Holm wrote his book is largely concerned with the rules governing particular styles of Northwest Coast art. And it's good as far as it goes, but there are exceptions to all the rules, and the exceptions begin to become more numerous than the examples to prove the rules, so... I don't know. I think it just requires a familiarity with the styles, and nobody to this day can really say for sure in the great number of cases which is Tlingit Tsimshian or Haida, which are very closely related styles. You can always tell the totem poles are very distinct, and some of the masks, but when you get into food dishes and house front paintings and various things, it's very difficult to tell who did what. And there was so much trading around between those groups that just attributing them to the place where they were collected is no advantage at all.
I think there's more skill involved in Northwest Coast art, in every way, It takes a lot of practice to do an ovoid or U-shape. It doesn't take any practice at all to do an abstract form of a human being.
How about doing
that? Well, that's, I think, close to Northwest Coast. But I think the Northwest Coast Indians proved that they could do an exact copy of a human face, for example, in all their portrait masks. But the portrait mask is too simple to them. So they designed it with super designs on the face. Whereas if it was European art, they would put rosy cheeks on the guy and there wouldn't be any fine art involved in that. It'd just be even a bit of red and that's about it.
What is the portrait mask?
Portrait masks were human-like figures that are face masks that were used to represent chiefs or chief speakers.
Are they exact portraits of
individual people? I don't think so, but they were really obviously human faces.
Just different
shapes. Yeah, and the portrait mask, for example, of a woman would have a design on the face. That was probably her crest, her main crest, or whatever. Designed on the side of the face.
Well, if you study the periods like Impressionism, Post-Impressionism, Cubism, and so on, you can just study their art, pick up their art and paint it. But you take the reverse and take a European coming over here trying to learn the art. It seems to be an inbred thing. I know it is, but it seems to be. It takes years and years of training. I had a teacher that had studied native Indian art for something like 17 years, and I went through his whole portfolio of paintings and drawings, which he had actually done, which were beautiful, but they contained colors which we didn't have. They contained shapes which shouldn't have been there, and his whole sense of fluidity was completely wrong. And it took me about 2 years to finish off what he had done, to correct what he had done in 17 years.
Art, then, the need of art seems to have a different form of fluidity and interior design. Like, the animal is not depicted from the outside only. When the outside areas do not suffice for the design, he goes internally. And he picks up the, like in a whale with its large body. Has a large, you know, it's a large empty space. So they depict the spinal cord and the rib area. And along the spinal cord is the red area where the blood would be. It's like in a fish. Along the spine is the blood cell. And that's what he depicts in there to fill it in. And trying to learn an art form that isn't your actual culture is really hard because a lot of people would not know how to do it. And also, just by your own family crest, there are certain ways of doing your own crest. And therefore, you learned about doing that type of animal, and you learned all the elements that were contained in that animal. And because of contact with other tribes, you learned theirs. And it's just the same as if I went over to Rome and tried to distinguish between Roman sculptures and Greek sculptures. If I did not have the training, I could not tell. But it will take years and years of training, say, to tell them apart. Because one grew out of the other. And now, in between the two actual periods, where the acculturation of the Greek into the Roman culture occurred, I could not tell which was which. Nonetheless, I happened to be actually part of that culture. The Indian depicted the symbols of his art in a supernatural way. It wasn't a worship, it was more in awe of the animal. Crests were picked up because of myths containing these animals. And the art is depicted in such a way that it can be used in two-dimensional form, it can be used in ornamentation, or else on something that is functional. And it can be done as amulets, bracelets, in three-dimensional form. It's completely a change of art. Now, if you draw a tree, you can carve a tree. You try to carve a tree of what you painted. And most of the designs are made in such a way that with a very little deviation can be shot from one form of art to another, from carving to painting to writing, whatever. And European followed a process of realism. There is, from all the way from the Byzantine, where perception of death. Like if they drew two people, even supposedly one person with 100 feet back, they both see the same size. The Indian depicted mostly the tails, and for some reason developed a very unique form of art which has never been copied anywhere, and I don't think can be.
Well, to start with, the West Coast art was a very stylized type of art, and on initial contact with the West Coast people, the European people, of course, didn't understand and could hardly make out what the art form actually represented. That's one of the basic differences. Also, I would say that the West Coast art is kind of a restrictive art. You're restricted to certain guidelines, whereas any other art form, you were able to express yourself in any manner that suited you. In the case of West Coast art, you couldn't really do this. One of the other reasons that I feel that the West Coast art, Northwest Coast art, was different from the European art forms was the fact that the art itself was a very functional type of thing, and it was applied to just about every functional object that they ever owned, which, for instance, started with their house fronts, their totem poles, their house posts, their mortuary poles, their bowls, their dishes, their spoons, even their halibut hooks, and various things of this nature. So anything that they owned, the art form was applied to whatever it was that they owned.
A certain class of artists.
No, there very, very definitely there was only a small percentage of the people that actually worked in the art form. The art form would apply to the culture at that time the same way as various other abilities apply today. You have certain people that are exceptional at certain things, and in our society today. And these people sell these abilities for money, and they buy other things, necessities of life. And the same principle applied in the old days. If you were an artist, you did your artwork and you traded that for various other items. For instance, if you were a canoe maker, then you would make canoes and trade that for possibly totem poles. Those that were good at making totem poles would possibly trade that for certain types of food. There were the fishermen, there were the hunters, there were those that were best at building houses, for instance, and they would trade that for various types of art forms or other necessities for their existence. So just the same as in our society today, there was a very small percentage of them that actually worked in the art form. And as a general rule, the artists at that time came from the upper structure of their society as it existed at that time. There were very few artists, really, that emerged from the second or third class.
I felt before beginning my interviews, and I still do feel, that native art was so tied into native life, religion, and social usage that it cannot be a living, viable art form today. As Bill Reed said, they are only pale or darker shadows of the former artists. Art must be a product of the culture it springs from, or it is merely copying. It ceases to be an art and becomes a representation of the past, forgeries of another era or another place. There were five questions which I asked the artist regarding this aspect. They were, do you feel that traditional Northwest Coast Indian art was so tied into Indian religion and social usage that it can no longer be handled in the same manner that it had in pre-white days? What has the introduction of white man's tools, materials, and methods done to Indian art? How, as an Indian artist, do you differ from white artists? Is there such a thing as an Indian art, or is it art first and foremost? Is your art and the art of the early artists the same thing? Are you trying to achieve the same thing? Are you achieving it? Here are their comments.
Well, I certainly would have said so 10 or 15 years ago. It's impossible to conceive in an intellectual way an art form existing out of the social context that gave it its validity or its very, very existence and form. But since this recent revival of so much at least superficially acceptable material, it's hard to make such a dogmatic statement now. I think it's probably can't exist in the same form. I think probably in future times, people looking at the output of the last century and the output of this century will see quite a difference, which perhaps we can't determine now, that the something of the spirit and something of the force and vitality is missing in the things that we do. Maybe we've got something else. Maybe we're making something new in some way different. I doubt it. I think really we're just pale or darker shadows of the things that have gone before. And I don't think it's possible for that the output of this present time, which is derived second hand and created solely for commercial purposes to be sold to another culture, can have the same vitality or validity as the stuff that was made purely for the use of the people who gave it its very existence. Certainly nobody will ever be able to achieve the masterpieces of the past again. You know, what the best we can do is sort of produce good run-of-the-mill stuff. I suppose we can do that as well, and in some cases better than the run-of-the-mill artists did in the last century. But we will never produce the great masterworks of the last century. It's a commercial proposition. It's better than working for a living. That's about the best that can be said for it these days. I think it gives a lot of young Indian people who otherwise would be doing either monotonous, dull jobs or nothing very much, gives them a chance to achieve some kind of an identity as well as a certain economic existence.
Do you feel this is more a souvenir product than an art product than
Yeah, it's a kind of a high, when it's well done, it's a kind of a high class souvenir. But it's,
it isn't something that maybe in the next century will be collected in art gallery.
Sure, it will be. But that won't make it, it'll be collected because it's a very good souvenir product, but they're not the souvenir products that in the past have become art objects of today. It's not high art objects, you know, at least collectible objects were good places in museums. I mean, you know, we're already in museums, and once the thing gets into a museum, it's never going to get out of there. So
the existence of contemporary Southwest Coast Indian art objects in the museum collections is assured because they're already there. But I don't think that changes the fact that the stuff that came out of the living culture is still going to rank much higher, and always going to rank much higher than the stuff that we do today, or except that, you know, on a different plane. Nobody ever made, say, the little gold caskets or things that I made. So I think my little gold caskets will stand on their own aesthetic as very pretty objects, and in relationship not to Northwest Coast art so much, but in relationship to other little gold caskets throughout the world. So, and I, you know, I think that's fine. They can hold their own or rank somewhere in that hierarchy. But no, they won't be like the great carvings of the past by any means. Don't expect them to.
What is the introduction of white man's tool materials in that country? Or
well, what did it do, you mean? Well, it certainly produced the great golden age. I think there's no doubt that that after however many thousands of years these people had been practicing this type of expression, it reached its greatest flowering in the last century with the introduction of iron and steel tools. It permitted greater elaboration, but greater production, and it had a revolutionary effect on it. It's, you could say that it was beneficial, I suppose, up to the point when, that, the technology certainly didn't hurt the people of the West Coast in any way, and enhanced the production of their material culture. That's all I can say. I mean, it's better to carve with a steel tool than a stone tool.
Well, what about
silk
and things like that, which in the adult world,
oh, that's great. That's just like printing your own $10 bills. That's the main cultural advantage of silk screen. Well, I don't feel that I'm a native artist. I'm going to say I'm a kind of an honest tradesman with a certain background in the Haida past. I think my position is kind of silly. You know, I play a funny game, and people pay me enough to permit me to play it, and. It's a thing that I've been puzzling over most of my life, and I really haven't come to any great answers about it. I really couldn't say, but I am essentially a jewelry designer. When I do jewelry that isn't of Haida origin, then it's derives from the same sources that everybody else derives their design from. And stands on its own merits in that context. In the Haida things, well, I think it's all the same thing. You've got to get an idea, and whether the idea comes from the Bauhaus or from the Renaissance or from whatever European source you derive your ideas from, then you have to impose your own imagination and personality and so on that idea, and then bring it into some kind of a visual realization. Well, in the Haida jewelry that I make, the idea comes from the Haida background, and I reinterpret it in my own way. I guess it's a very similar process, and probably there isn't any difference, except in the final product. Well, it depends on whose viewpoint you're looking at it from. If you're looking at it from the viewpoint of, well, again, we have that Indian business, which I find it difficult to cope with because it's too broad a field. But well, let's talk about the Haidas as the people I'm concerned with, anyhow. And they didn't think of there being such a thing as art, which is their art was actually the essence of their life. Their subsistence was easily attained, and the rest of their lives were spent in producing what we call art. And they lived completely surrounded by it and obsessed by it, and the time was consumed by it, and that was what their life was all about. But they didn't think of it as art. They just thought of it as an essential part of their existence. But I suppose the motivation, the impulse, and so on came from the same sources that we have in Western art. Certainly it was the same as it is in the days when Europe was a collection of religious societies, or when religion was a strong motivating force. Not that Haida art was religious in context, actually, it was more hierarchical and had different, spiritual connotations than say, Christian art has. But it was still an attempt to interpret the abstract concepts of the society of people as a whole in some concrete way to get a reflection of their inner lives in some external fashion. So in that respect, it was the same. It isn't like art today, if that's art today is probably its main function seems to be to destroy itself. And it hasn't got this iconographic spiritual, religious, what have you, significance that the art of the past has. But I think there are very close parallels between Haida art and the art of all other people at a similar stage of their development.
Well, if you research the history of Indian of the art, you see that it evolved a lot upon the religious ceremonies, like war dances, war shields, hunting. You mean it. Another aspect of life, the sickness, the shaman came with masks, rattles, these costumes. For a war party, they call going a war dance, and all the ceremonial ritual breaks that comes along with it, that has certain masks. And art was very involved until the impact of the white man changed the art in such a way that the Indians, instead of going towards the original art that we were taught, would change its art for tourist sales. So his art was created in such a way that it was meant for non-Indian use.
Do you think the introduction of the white man's tools and methods has changed his art?
It has speeded it up a lot because of the fuel. And the different media have created some sort of some of the masks were better, where they
confined within a certain area. I draw, and then I fit that down to a certain area. Indian people
We were, in a sense, we're downtrodden people. We've never been given the opportunity to really take part in society as it exists today, although everybody expects us to. I would say that the focal point for us to better ourselves and our positions would be first to find out who we are. And in this manner, I say we must go back to our culture and learn who we are before we can become part of this society. So in this sense, it has some value. But most of this culture doesn't exist today, but there are some parts of the culture that still does exist in the people's minds. And you'll find that the older people still retain some of this culture and some of this feeling. There's something that is definitely that you would call an Indian feeling, that is a very definite thing. An Indian feels like an Indian. And even though he's not aware maybe of his cultural background and all the rest of it, he still has that Indian feeling. We have a different attitude towards life than non-Indians do. Actually, it hasn't really done anything except to make it a little bit easier for the Indians to be able to produce the artistic work that they had done traditionally with the old type tools. It may have cut down the time element a little bit, and up to this point, it hasn't improved the quality of the art. I hope that eventually someday it will, but then we have a long ways to go. When I say we, I'm talking about the people that are working in the art form today. We have a long ways to go to reach the point where they can turn out items that would match the excellence of and quality of the art that was turned out in the old days. Now, I realize that we're living in a different day and age, and it's very, very difficult to put in the time and effort into the work as they used to do in the old days. They didn't have a time problem in the old days. They didn't have to worry about the cost. They didn't have to worry about the rent at the end of the month, and they didn't have to worry about running down the grocery store and buying groceries every day. They lived a simple life. They hustled for their food in the summertime, and they stored away enough for the winter. They had no pressing needs. They had their home. They had their firewood was handy. They didn't have to hustle for wood. So they could spend all of their time on the social aspect of their life, as well as their art forms and various other socializing that took place. I think that with the modern-day tools, within the next 5 years, you're going to see an awful lot of young people that are working in the art form today reaching this stage of excellence. And at that time, I think you can attribute this stage of excellence to the tools that are available now. That's a pretty hard one to answer. I feel that Edenshaw was a product of his time. And I don't know whether he would be that outstanding if he were confronted with the problems that the Indians are confronted with today. I don't know whether he would have reached that state of excellence. Probably, more than likely, he would have, because if you're an artist, you're an artist, and that's just... Yes, I would say very definitely there's such a thing as indie art. I can refer back to the statement I made some time back about my being able to look at a piece. Now, I've seen a lot of work that was done by non-Indian people that was representative of the Indian art, various raffles and various other things that I've seen that were done beautifully. But the minute I picked them up, I knew that they weren't done by Indian people. So, yes, there's something very definitely, there's something very, you know, that you could definitely call Indian art. It's Indian art, and that's all there is to it. Of course, the art form itself is very different than any other art form, and it's associated in most people's minds with the Indian people, especially the West Coast art.
Is the contemporary art and the art of the early artists the same thing? Are you trying to achieve the same thing, and are you achieving it?
Well, I think that think that this probably applies to the Indian art as well. There's all kinds of Indian art forms that are around today that would have to be considered very contemporary. We've got a lot of workmanship that, or artistic workmanship that has developed amongst the Salish people and amongst the Nootka people that you would have to consider contemporary. It's developed in the last 100 to 150 years to the point now where it's reaching a form of excellence, which it didn't really have before, but it has now. This is a very valid type of Indian art, and but also it's a very contemporary thing. Now, for the other tribes, the Kwakiutl people, for instance, Tsimshian people, the art tradition goes back, who knows how far back it goes, maybe hundreds of years. Today, I think right at this particular time, that most of the artists are trying to achieve excellence in a traditional art form. And most of them are not too concerned with a contemporary interpretation of this traditional art. I say that it's going to eventually change. It'll have to change. But so that those that are learning and those that are developing themselves as artists now, they have to relate to something very definite to develop themselves to the point where they can do excellent work. And so as a consequence, they revert back to studying the old pieces that are in existence, and of course their art form takes that particular shape. When these people reach a stage of excellence, then of course they will go into a more contemporary type of thing. I think a good example of that is Bill Reid. Now, in my estimation, Bill Reid is one of the best Indian artists that works in the Indian art today. I think that he's still head and shoulders above most others. Robert Davidson is right on his heels. There are two or three others that are very, very close. Lloyd Wadhams, for instance, is another one. And I should be careful what I'm saying here, because there's also two or three others that are very, very good. And if I neglect to mention their names, well, then it might make somebody feel bad. But the reason I mention this is because, as I say, Bill Reid has started to work in a contemporary sense. Occasionally, most of his work is very traditional, but he has put a contemporary feeling into, or interpretation into, certain areas of his work, and it's beautiful. You know, he's doing an excellent job of it. So I think that the Indian art form is in a stage of transition as well. Eventually, we'll be working in a contemporary sense. Lloyd Wadhams is another one who has started to apply a contemporary interpretation to expressional art form, and it's excellent. He's doing an excellent job of it.
Unfortunately, this portion of the interview of Tony Hunt is completely unusable. I will attempt to paraphrase what he has said. In his comparison of the native and white artists, he has compared the native artist of the past to Da Vinci, to the Uomo Universale, the man of the Renaissance, who were architects, carvers, painters, dancers, singers, teachers, speakers, and in some cases even chiefs. He feels it doesn't matter if the person who does the actual production of the native art is white or Indian. If it is good art, it doesn't matter if it's white or native. If it's bad art, or bad work by a native, it still is good art. The Indians of the interior and the Caughnawaga Reserve near Montreal both carved totem poles, which is completely unnatural to them. Possibly this is another emphasis of mine. But in neither case did they traditionally have totem poles. And in most cases, the